The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
Okay, so before I start the talk, let's pay homage to Buddha again. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato Sama sambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato Sama sambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato Sama sambuddhassa. Okay, good morning everyone. Okay, few stories to share with you today, so hopefully it is beneficial for all of you and to be able to apply in your daily life. So the first story that I'm gonna share is from first story I'm gonna share is from the I think it's from the Dhammapada or the extracted from the Great Chronicles of Buddha. So this is the story of a venerable Kundadana. So there was once, I think in Kassapa's Buddha's time. So there were two bhikkhus, let's just name them Bhikkhu A and Bhikkhu B. Okay? And then at that time, they were very good friends and practicing together harmoniously very well. Then after that, during the I think a Kassapa Buddha's time. So they have to go for the Parinibbaka once every 6 months. Now in this Gotama Buddha's time is 2 weeks, but they have to go every 6 months in Kassapa Buddha's time. So they went there. They were on the way. I think they shouldn't have any psychic power. So they were walking through the forest. They were walking there together. And suddenly, Bhikkhu A, he had to answer the call of nature. So he told his friend, "Hey, my friend, I will need to relieve myself. Okay, then after that, he went into the bushes and find a suitable place. Then Bhikkhu B was waiting there. And then at that time, there was a deva, a heavenly being. He saw that, these two monks are practicing very well and their relationship is very good. He was thinking, out of maybe like mischief or something like that, he was thinking, is it possible to, break up their friendship? I want to test their friendship, So this deva manifests itself as a woman, as a lady. So when Bhikkhu A came out from the bushes, the deva manifests itself as a woman who's, maybe dressed, not well dressed, not properly dressed, and like they just did something bad, Then when Bhikkhu B saw that, it was like, oh, wow, what is that? What is my friend doing with a woman in the bushes? Aiyah! Then he was very shocked, and angry. But Bhikkhu A couldn't see the lady because I think it was behind him. But anyway, Bhikkhu A walked to Bhikkhu B and said, "Hey, okay, let's friend, I'm finished, let's go." So Bhikkhu B said, "Take your things, I'm not going with you." And then Bhikkhu A was like, "Huh? Why? What happened? I didn't do anything. What was wrong?" Then Bhikkhu B said, "Oh, I thought you were a very good monk, but you dare to do something like this. If you were Bhikkhu A, you'd be like, what did I do, man?" Then after that, Bhikkhu B just hand over his bowls and things to him, and he just left. They went on different paths. So Bhikkhu A was like, what happened? What like that? It's just like, don't know what happened. Anyway, they went to the place of a congregation where they have to do the Parinibbaka. And then at that time, Bhikkhu B didn't want to join the congregation because it's not proper to do conduct a Parinibbaka with somebody whose sila is impure. Then they went, and then after that, because he doesn't want to join the congregation. So the Sangha couldn't do the Padimokkha. Oh, at that time, the Deva was like thinking, oh, I've done a very serious mistake, no? Actually, I just thought of testing their relationship, but now the Sangha, it caused the Sangha not to be able to recite the Padimokkha. Oh, very. And then knowing the seriousness of this mistake, so the Deva manifests itself as an elderly man, came down, and then talked to Bhikkhu B. Say, oh, Bhante, that Bhikkhu A is pure. The woman that you saw was my manifestation. So Bhikkhu B asked, who are you? Then the elderly man say, oh, I'm a Deva. Okay, I know you saw a woman, but that woman was my manifestation, you know. So Bhikkhu A is pure. Don't worry about it. Go and please go. And then he hold his hands and lead them to the Sangha. And then they managed to carry out the Padimokkha. But after that, probably because it's not in the commentaries, but I mean, I guess, probably because of that bad feeling that Bhikkhu B had in his mind towards Bhikkhu A. So after that time, they were not on very cordial terms anymore. And Bhikkhu A, after that incident, I think he saw that I was also very suffering, samsara, so I practiced hard. And in the text, it says that he attained arahantship. And nothing was said of Bhikkhu B in the text. No? But what happened to that Deva? So the Deva, after the Deva life finished, was born in hell because of this karma. And for many, many lives between Kassapa Buddha and our Buddha, Gautama Buddha, he was reborn in Apaya again and again. And sometimes, according to Great Chronicles of Buddha, sometimes when he's reborn as a human, then he or she will always be blamed for something that he or she never did, but always get blamed and something, always have misunderstanding. Then until that it comes to the time of our Buddha, okay? And then he was born as a rich merchant, a son of a rich merchant or somebody well-to-do. And after hearing about the Buddha's teaching, when to ordain and became a monk. But the moment he became a monk, a woman, because of this karma, a manifestation of a woman appeared around him. And so when he went for Pinnipata, you can imagine, there's one monk going for Pinnipata, behind one very beautiful woman walking. It's not going to be good for the monk, right? So often, sometimes he don't get enough food. And sometimes, when people offer food to him, then they will say very sarcastically, they say, okay, Bhante, this is for you. And this is for the woman behind you. But, you know, he couldn't see anything. Then he was so suffering, no? And of course, he didn't have enough food and support because people were thinking that he's a bad monk. Then in the Sangha also they see. Everyone, many people could see that woman except him. So some people reported this to King Pasenadi, the king of Kosala. Then the king thought, I should investigate this thing. Huh? So he went to the monastery and then he asked the monks, hey, where is Venerable Kundadana staying? Oh, they're staying there. Okay, then he went. And when he went, he just observed from a distance first. Then he saw, there's a woman around him. Then somehow he thought to experiment with it. No? So he thought to approach the woman. Then he did it in a way that I think the Venerable Kundanana couldn't see. Maybe he go inside his, maybe the Venerable Kundanana was doing something and then the woman was there. Then the king approached the woman went inside the kuti. Then the king went inside the kuti. And then he searched, but the woman disappeared. So he searched high and low for the woman but couldn't see. So he thought, maybe it is because of karma. So he went out. When he first entered the monastery, he didn't pay respect to the Venerable Kunandana because he thought it was an impure monk, no? Not so good morality. But after that, he thought that it's because of karma. So he went and then he paid respects to the Venerable Kunandana. And he asked the Venerable Kunandana, "Oh, Bande, do you have enough food? How are you?" First he asked, "How are you?" And then the Venerable Kunandana said, "Not too bad." I mean, it's bad, but not too bad until, you know, it's not the worst. Maybe he's seen the worst. Then the king asked him, "Do you have enough food?" Then the Venerable Kunandana just put down his head and, you know, doesn't want to show his head. Then the king said, "Okay, Bande, practice well. If you need any requisites and food, come to my palace. I will support you." Okay? Like that. So, with the problem of food and support gone, so the Venerable Kunandana went to the palace for food every day and then practiced diligently. And after that, when he attained arahantship, I think the karma was finally exhausted, and the apparition or the manifestation of that woman disappeared. Like that. So this is one thing, it's also from Dhammapada, but today we'll focus more on the story and how we can use this in our daily life, this example. So this is the first story. Another story is actually from the Majjhima Nikaya, Sutta number 50. So the rebook to Mara, Sutta number 50. So because of time, I will make time constraint, I will just say generally about the story, no? So there was once one of the Mara, he wanted to disturb the Venerable Mahamoggallana. So when he went to the Venerable Mahamoggallana's body, you know, and then after that, sitting on the stomach, then of course the Venerable Mahamoggallana managed to detect the Mara and then asked him to go out of the body. Then the Venerable Mahamoggallana told the Mara, "Hey, don't do this to the disciple of the Buddha. Last time in one of my previous existence, I was also a Mara called Mara Dusi. And I have a sister and you were my nephew. You were the son of my sister." Huh? Then he started to relate what happened to Mara Dusi. So during Kakusanda Buddha's time, then during that time, this Mara Dusi, he wanted to influence the monks. He wanted, because he was thinking that, oh, these monks, when they attain noblehood and when they attain arahantship, I cannot control them. So in order to disturb their practice, I want to do something to disturb their practice. So what did he do? He started to influence the villagers to scold, to insult the monks when they go for Pinnavata. How he did that was he didn't like take possession of them and take over their mind or something like that, but he kind of like influenced them according to the footnote it was said that he influenced them in a way that they imagined that the monks were doing something bad, doing something immoral. Then they get angry and they so when the monks came, they scolded them, they insulted them and things like that. Then the Sangha went back and the Buddha know about these things. So the Buddha gathered the monks and then say, bhikkhus, now there's a Mara, Mara trying to disturb your mind. So that's why people, when you go out, people scold you and insult you and all these things. So monks practice metta, practice loving kindness, practice compassion, practice sympathetic joy, practice equanimity for all beings in the world measurelessly, with no measure. And with that, the monks, they carry out the Buddha's instructions diligently, and they practice and they protected their mind with the Brahma Viharas. And so no no anger, or if any anger arises, but they were able to purify it very quickly. And because of this practice, Mara couldn't disturb their mind. Then the Mara thought, now I use this method, the hard method cannot. Now let me try the soft method. So the Mara also tried to influence the villagers to let them think that, these monks are very good, no? You insult them, but they are still very loving to you, very kind to you, and they don't insult you back, they don't take revenge on you. These monks are very good, very virtuous, like that. So what do you think? Do you think Mara was being kind? Mara want to practice Dharma already? No, actually Mara wanted to let the monks want to let the monks fall into temptations. So because of this influence of Mara, so the villagers they were offering a lot of things to the Sangha, and they were praising the Sangha and very high faith and very strong faith in the Sangha. Then the Buddha also knew what was happening. So the Buddha asked the monks to come together and say, monks, now you receive a lot of things, but be careful. This one also, there's some Mara trying to disturb. So monks practice asubha, repulsiveness of the body, and practice, foulness of the nutriment. That means contemplating the foulness of the repulsiveness of the nutriment, and then develop disenchantment towards the world, and also cultivate the perception of anicca, which is impermanence. And with this, the monks, they practiced diligently, and with this, they were able to protect their mind towards going too much into greed, falling into greed, falling into conceit, and all that, falling into defilements. Then, with this, Mara failed again. So Mara thought, then after that, in the sutta, Mara was not so happy about this, of course. Then he possessed a boy and used the boy to take a stone and hit one of the head of the chief disciple. Then the Buddha turned around and said, this Mara Dusi knows no limits, like that. And because of that, because of hitting the chief disciple of a Buddha, so the karma manifested and ripened, and Mara Dusi fell into hell at that very instance. So with these two stories, there comes to be some things that we need to consider in our daily life and how we can use these stories. So we see, for the Venerable Kunadana's case, it is a little bit like Pisuna, it is the breaking up of friendship, right? This karma that is breaking up friendship. So we can also reflect ourselves. Is there some, let's name it as like splitting karma, because you split relationships, no? Make it easy. So is there some kind of this splitting karma in the world? Is there a possibility that may happen? Well, it may actually, if we think about it, and of course if you meditate and if you look back into your past lives, then maybe you would have discerned that maybe you have done Pisuna Vajja or this kind of a splitting karma in the past. So actually we have done all kinds of unwholesome deeds in the past. We have done all kinds of wholesome deeds in the past also, except that we didn't gain Nibbana yet. But anyway, coming back to this splitting karma, is there a possibility that it will happen in our life? Actually, it's yes, no? So how does it happen? How do you think? Splitting karma, how will it happen? Actually, it happens when, we cannot, I'd like to quote some examples that we see in our community, especially in the meditation community, Buddhist community. Sometimes there's a group of people coming in with the noble aspirations to want to do something good for the sasana, want to bring Dharma benefit to the people and all that. But after that, if you notice, sometimes they split. And then they split. And because of differences in ideas, because of I don't like you, you don't like me, I split. And split is okay. Maybe they split into different paths. Maybe there will be more branches of Buddhism and they spread the Dharma, is okay. But if they're fighting with each other and competing with each other, which one thing I don't really like is like treating the devotees like market, you know? Ah, you start up another monastery. Ah, you spoil the market. Ah, I don't like to treat people like market. But there are some people maybe who think like that, you know? Then sometimes when I notice that when these things happen, sometimes it's because I thought that it may be because of this splitting karma. Of course, I'm not the Buddha. I cannot say 100%. Sometimes it's because of this splitting karma. Why? How does this splitting karma manifest? How do you like kind of know that there's some kind of this karma ripening, this kind of a relationship breaking karma? Well, one very common phenomenon is that sometimes you go to the place, and then you normally you see this person, or maybe normally you see Simon, and you'll be like, "Hey, Simon, what's up, man? What's up, mate?" Like that, right? Yeah. But suddenly today you see Simon. Oh, why Simon? Huh? I don't like to see Simon. Sometimes this thought and that feeling comes to you, like he didn't do anything, and you didn't do anything. But sometimes this kind of a thought, and this kind of a feeling, this kind of perception comes to you. And especially, I notice this in meditation circles. Sometimes the students, when they are learning from a teacher, sometimes this happens, but the teacher never do anything. Or the teacher may do something which is correct, but it's not according to the student's expectations. Then the student gets angry and is unpleased, unhappy, and then after that, if they indulge in that continuously, then gradually the relationship will just split. So this kind of a manifestation, we have to be very careful, because sometimes it's because of karma, but it's not that, oh, if karma ripens, then we have to follow it. It's not like that. If karma results ripen, we cannot control we cannot control them not to happen, but we can control how we react to them. So how do we react to these kind of things? Like, for example, in the morning you see your wife or you see your husband, and hi, I don't like my husband, I don't like my wife. So without anything. So how do we get over this? One very important thing in life is wise attention is that whenever we have negative feelings, whenever we have uncomfortable feelings, because uncomfortable feelings will usually, the reaction to uncomfortable feelings are anger and rejection and very subtle levels of anger. So whenever we feel bad, when our feeling is bad, whether bodily or mentally, and all our thoughts are unwholesome, don't trust our thoughts first. Don't trust, no matter how logical it is, don't trust our thoughts first. Why? Because emotions and feelings affect our perception and our ability to analyze things in a clear way a lot. I think, I don't know whether you guys have experienced this, but when you are happy, when you go to the office, even if somebody bumps into you, you're like, "Hey, wow, you've grown stronger. Yeah, hey, good day." But when you're in a bad mood, somebody never bump into you. Somebody just like see you in a way. See. Like that, you know? So we notice that when you have bad feelings and negative emotions, it affects the mind in a way that reacts in a negative way. And it creates, akusala karma, wholesome karma. And secondly, according to the Buddha's teachings, when you are in an unwholesome mind state, the mind doesn't resonate, it's not associated with wisdom. That means we cannot use wisdom when we are in a negative state of mind. Of course, like if your mindfulness is strong enough, you're able to have wise attention to that feeling, and your mindfulness is strong enough, then maybe you can think clearly. Maybe at that time, your mind can transcend that feeling. Then maybe it is possible. But generally, for people who are not trained, whenever the feelings, bad feelings, uncomfortable feelings come, negative emotions come, and unwholesome thoughts come, then actually very difficult for them to transcend it or pay wise attention to it. So if we apply this rule, and this culture, this wise attention culture is practiced in my organization in Malaysia, but not 100%, of course, not because to do it like 100%, it would be like not practical. But generally, 60-70% of the time we are able to do it, and it solves 60-70% of the disagreements and all the arguments and all that. Why? Just think of it, like if in my society, in Malaysia, we have this culture. If somebody falls into negative emotions, we try not to speak it out. We try not to talk about it, but we try not to analyze things. We try not to make decisions. We try not to voice out our views. Why? Because our perceptions and our thinkings are affected by that negative feeling at that time. So usually we don't do that, but 60-70% only lah. But actually resolve a lot of maybe disagreements already. Then in our society, when we know that we have negative feeling, the first thing to solve is not the problem. The first thing to solve is our problem, our bad feeling. Maybe you have attachment, maybe you have greed, maybe you have ego, maybe you're just unhappy with the way things are. So we try to use the Dhamma, practice metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, or other kinds of Dhamma contemplations to resolve the negative feelings in the mind first, to resolve the uncomfortable feelings in the mind first, or the body. Then when our mind is more clear and is in a more wholesome state, more bright state, then we contemplate and talk about it. So I actually recommend this to a lot of people, because if you can implement this not only in the organizations, in the offices, in the way you handle things, and also in the families. So imagine you and your spouse, you know, okay, let's, when if you have like an agreement between your spouse and say, okay, when we have negative emotions, let's purify our mind first. We can talk about it. Yeah, no problem. But we know that, okay, now he or she is talking when they are angry. So we have to give some doubt to what they are saying. Okay, how they are feeling. Then after that, let's practice together. And practice together and purify the mind. And after that, when the bad feelings and negative emotions are purified, then you talk about it again. I think if you practice this, you'll notice that sometimes when you're in a bad state of mind, you think in a way and you think that that's so right, that should be done like this. But when you're in a positive mind state, then you're like, yeah, that's right, but I can forgive, no? I can have metta for that person, no? Like that, So this is a very, very helpful teaching that we can get from this, which is whenever we have negative emotions, don't completely trust our logical thinking. No matter how you feel, it should be like this, should be like that. Don't think about it first. Oh, that person is good. That person is bad. Don't think about it first. Purify the mind. Relax. And then after that, analyze it. Like that. And so some people ask, oh, Bante, what happened? That person really did something wrong. Yeah, that person did wrong. But if that person did something wrong, then they accumulate unwholesome karma. Okay? But why do you have to react in a way that you accumulate unwholesome karma just because the other person did something wrong? If we are angry with that person, if we reject that person, then we are creating unwholesome karma too, right? But can't you love that person, right? Can't you train to love your enemy? I mean love, but you don't have to get close together, but at least you can have a attitude of friendliness towards them, isn't that so? So with this, if we can relate to things according to the Maratajaniya Sutta, no matter what kind of a phenomenon, what kind of people that we meet, if we can react with the Brahma Viharas, or practice the Brahma Viharas when we are angry, and then to contemplate about impermanence and asubha, repulsiveness of body, and create contemplation about disenchantment about the world. When you feel that your mind is getting to too much greed and craving and attachments, then in a way that will protect us towards falling into the defilements. And also this splitting karma. So when you go to work, you see your boss or your colleague, and suddenly you feel like, I feel like bashing up that person today. Then practice Brahma Viharas. No? Oh, okay. Now this anger, this thought of anger has arisen. Oh, this is unwholesome. It's causing me suffering. And if I beat him up, it will cause him suffering also. So we are creating causes of suffering for the present, in the present and in the future. Oh, no need. Okay. Let's have a metta towards them. If you cannot have metta towards them, sometimes some people say, oh, Bhante, my metta is not strong enough. How to love my enemy? How do I say? Sometimes they practice and they say, may he be well and happy, may he be well and happy, may he be well and happy, may he be well. Sometimes if you practice, you get more and more angry. Some people practice like that. If your metta is not strong enough, no problem. Practice karuna, thinking, we contemplate that, oh, the other person, when they are doing these bad things, unwholesome things, wrong things, then they are creating causes of suffering for themselves in the future. And if they do something bad to you, then we can contemplate that the bad feeling, the things that you are experiencing now, oh, maybe it's because of my karma, but they are creating bad karma in the future, for the future. So what you experience now, they may experience in the future. And all this is why? It's actually because of greed, hatred, and delusion, right? So because of greed, hatred, and delusion, they do something wrong, they do something bad to us, they harm people. Then when we contemplate that this, actually we don't have the heart to blame them if your karuna is strong. We don't have the heart to blame them. We feel that what I'm suffering now, they will suffer again. But now, because we know Dharma, so we can purify with compassion, with the Brahma Viharas, and not create new seeds of suffering. But for them, if they don't know Dharma, then they are creating, or even if they know Dharma, but they don't practice Dharma, they didn't have wise attention at that time, then they are creating new seeds of suffering for themselves in the future, isn't it so? So with this contemplation, we understand that, oh, all this is just because of ignorance, because of not knowing Four Noble Truths, because of not knowing the workings of karma. Ayo. Then our mind soften up and we can have compassion towards even our enemies, even for those who hurt us. And if karuna doesn't work, then we can practice equanimity. Equanimity means the contemplation of every beings are owners of their own karma. So if we calculate, if you know how to calculate dukkha, this was what I done in my early years as a monk. So I was thinking, okay, oh, you know, now they are doing something bad for us. Then they are creating like what we say just now. They are creating causes of suffering. Then now because of greed, hatred, and delusion, I may be angry. Then I create more akusala karma and more seeds of suffering in the future, this is not so worth it. So, better not. Then equanimity, cause and effect. Now I'm receiving the results of my vipaka, my karma results. Then, I'm the owner of my karma. But you know, many people in the world, they meet with a lot of injustice in the world, unfairness in the world, right and wrong in the world. Things go towards your expectation and not, fulfill your expectation or doesn't fulfill your expectations. A lot of these things. Then people, when things are good, they get happy, no? When things are bad, then they get angry. But if we contemplate it from the point of view from karma, there's no causeless effect, isn't that so? Right? So, if there's no causeless effect, then this effect, that's this bad experience that I'm experiencing, then definitely there's a cause or there are causes. So sometimes it's not like just karma, but sometimes maybe because of our negligence, maybe because we work in a way and the other people work in a way, you know, like that. But if everything has been accounted for, and we have tried our best to fulfill the other causes, but things still happen, then maybe there's a 60-70% that it may be because of our karma. Okay, then when we contemplate that we are the owners of our own karma, then what power does it give us? It gives us the power to be able to accept it, accept the result. Like, okay, maybe I have done something bad in the past, I may not know the cause, I've done everything I can in the present, but these things still happen. Okay, maybe it may be because of the past, but okay, then at least if I accept it now, then the thing finish. When you can accept it, then actually your mind feels more balanced, and then after that, you can continue to work on creating the karmas that can help you to overcome those karma. For example, if you're sick, always sick, Then if we have done everything that we can, but you're still sick, then we can create more causes of more. If we accept it that this is maybe my karma, then I have to contemplate that this is maybe my karma. Okay, then I accept it. Accept that I'm sick, because some people are angry that they are sick, and they get sick because they're angry that they are sick. No, so firstly we accept it. Accept that it is a phenomenon. It may be a karma vipaka. Then after that, we try to create the causes to overcome this. So if you're sick, then what do we do? We can give dana. We can give health to people. When you give health to people, provide health to people, dana health to people. Like, for example, helping people with the cost of their surgery, this is one thing. Donating to the hospital, and if you know somebody if you have a family member who's feeling sore, this is a great opportunity to offer health and comfort to my fellow family member. Yay, like that. So if we can do this more and more, give people health and give people well-being, then gradually you'll find that. Because of this, when you do enough, and the possibility of us getting healthier will increase, like that. So, why do I say, just now I was saying about talking about calculating dukkha, no? Actually, why do I say like that? Because many people, actually, they need to suffer maybe just like 1 second or 2 second, or maybe like 1 minute or 2 minutes. But in the end, they suffer for 5 years and 10 years. Why? Because they cannot accept it. I cannot accept it. That person, I didn't do anything, but he bumped into me. I cannot accept it. That person, I didn't do anything, that he scold me. He insulted me. He did something wrong to me. And they hold it in their mind for 5 to 10 years, you know. And whenever they think about it, they suffer again. Whenever they think about it, they suffer again. Nobody's happy when they're angry, right? Anyone happy when they're angry? Not much, right? I mean, happy as in you feel comfortable. You don't feel comfortable when you're angry, right? You feel a lot of agitation here. And actually, sometimes you feel some pressure in the heart area, right? So nobody's comfortable when they're angry. Yeah? So when you think about this, but if we have yoniso manasikara, if we have wise attention, and when we meet up with these phenomenons, we contemplate, okay, this may be because of my karma, then you break the accumulation of that feeling of injustice, of non-acceptance. And because of that, you let go, you accept, you're able to accept it, accept the phenomenon that it happens, and you let it go. Then you may, and depends on how long you can let go, sometimes depends on your on the power of your Dhamma, if you practice Brahma Viharas continuously and you cultivate it until it becomes a habit, then you can let go of these feelings very quickly. But if not, then we have to continuously contemplate about, I'm the owners of my own karma, the beings are owners of their own karma, so this is a natural phenomenon, just karma vipaka ripening and like that. It depends on how long you can use this contemplation to purify your mind and for the uncomfortable feeling to let go. And then, but you see, you already reduce 5-10 years of suffering to maybe just 9 years, 300, and maybe 60 days. Maybe you take 5 days to purify that. So you have released from so much suffering already. That's why when I was a monk, I was like thinking, if I contemplate like that, if I practice like that, and this is in accordance with Dhamma, oh, I can be free from so many suffering. Then I practice. And when people come to me and, they were like saying things like, Bhante, I cannot forgive and all that. Then I really saw that, if they cannot let go in their mind, they cannot accept it, then they suffer for a long time. So if we can practice the Brahma Viharas and practice this equanimity, then it may be beneficial for us to let go of our negative feelings and all the bad feelings, and continue and create happiness for ourselves and move on with life. No? Like that. So this kind of a splitting karma, actually this talk was meant for part of a preparatory course for beginners to meditators, because we saw that when people are learning meditation, learning Dhamma, then some people fall into these kinds of things. Like suddenly they just feel unhappy with the teacher. But if they never apply yodiso madhasikara, if they believe they are thinking, when they have a negative thought or unwholesome thought or uncomfortable feeling, then gradually they split from the teacher. And this also happens to organizations also. When organizations, you have different people. So because of this and this, then after that, suddenly some thoughts and some feelings arises. And then they start to harbor a grudge, and then start to split, like that. But actually, no need to split one. Actually, if we can have, if we practice the Brahma Viharas, we can forgive, we can learn to forgive, we can learn to have magnanimity towards even the people who have different ideas, different views. But they're all beings. Let's live harmoniously and have metta for everyone and forgive everyone and accept that people will have different views. So yeah, then if we can do that, then actually we work together when we have different views. How can we find a common ground and how can we work together? When our emotions are not, in full swing, then that will help to promote a lot of harmony in the family, in the office and between your spouse and in the organizations also. So this is one thing that we have been practicing and still continuing to practice. So hopefully the teaching to this sharing today is beneficial to all of you. Hope all of us here will not fall easily into this kind of a splitting karma. And then hopefully everyone will be able to also forgive and to be able to have metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha towards our enemies or people that you dislike or people that dislike you. And hopefully with this harmonious mind, continue to practice meditation diligently and be able to attain path, fruition and nirvana as soon as possible for everyone. Okay. So, okay, so questions.
Question. Is there any questions from the
Never mind, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That's natural.
We did lose the legs. They see the
yeah.
Lost from the main bus. Yeah, it's not coming through the whole mics, but his one is.
You can think like this, but don't hope for the negative karma to ripen. Yeah. So you just have a good attitude is like, okay, we try our best to cultivate happiness and we try our best to for our wholesome karma to ripen, because when wholesome karma ripens, then hopefully it leads us more towards the Dharma. But if bad karma ripens, then okay, then let's just react to it and train to react to it with wise attention. Then I think this will be okay, because if there was once, I think one yogi in Malaysia, then he was like thinking, of course I'm not Buddha, we don't know whether this is because of that, but there's one phenomenon like this, okay? So we take it just like a phenomenon, a case study, okay? So there's one guy, he thought, oh, I want to exhaust all my bad karma. So he always wish, may my bad karma ripen so I can finish exhausting my karma. And always bad things happen to him, you know? Bad things happen to him. Then after that, he told my teacher, and my teacher said, no, not that one. Don't wish for it to happen. Of course, if it happens, then okay, we deal with it with Dharma. But don't wish for it, you know, because you cannot finish exhausting your karma, because even the Buddha also have to encounter the results of the bad karma also. So don't do like that. So yeah, then after that he says his life start to get better like that. So but of course I'm not Buddha, so I cannot really exactly say that it's because of that, but we saw a case like that, so yeah, we can take it for reference like that. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a cousin whose name Devdutt. And after the Buddha, after Siddhartha became a Buddha, Devdutt still have that jealousy and always trying to harm him.
Uh huh.
Is that the good bad karma?
It can be both, okay? So I was discussing this with one of my Bhantes yesterday. So if we look at it from the Venerable Kunadana's story, okay, like the story just now. So the Venerable Kunadana, he has his own karma. Then what about the villagers? Who offer info and say sarcastically, "Oh, Bande, this is for you. Okay, this is for the woman behind you, your girlfriend, huh?" Like that. So I was discussing this with one of the Bhantes. And then he was saying that according to Dhamma, actually it can be both, you know. Not only Verma Kundadana's vipaka, karma, but also is karma. Of course, karma may not be the only factor that is affecting, yeah? But karma can influence that person to be there. And sometimes because of Verbal Kundadana's karma, it can influence the mind of that person to react in a bad way to Verbal Kundadana. But also it can be the karma of that person for him to arise this thoughts in the mind and to be sarcastic to Verma Kundadana. So there is a possibility that it is a karma of one person. It may be a possibility that karma of both persons. So he says we can understand it like this. So in the case of the Buddha and the Devadatta, also we can understand it in the same way. Of course, there's Buddha's vipaka also, but also there's also the Devadatta's also karma. There's involved that influence him in such a way that he reacts like this to the Buddha. So yeah, there's possibilities like this. Okay.
Thank you, Venerable Metananda. Okay. There's a question online from Richard. I will paraphrase. It's a question about forgiveness. What if one finds it difficult to forgive oneself, especially if it is for one of the five heinous crimes? So in the example you gave, MN50, Mahamoggallana, he in his previous life had done some unfortunately bad things, including killing his parents. And so he was in suffering and hell for some time. So the question, I think, is what does one do to deal with the question of how to forgive oneself, especially if one has done terrible things?
I think this involves living a life without regret. Huh? So sometimes we can ask ourselves, at that moment where we did something wrong, did we live up to the highest wisdom at that time? So of course, when we do something wrong, it's not associated with wisdom. But if we had enough wisdom and mindfulness, we would not have done it, right? So if at that moment, we did everything we could, or we were not in control of our mind to be able to do something good, but yeah, then we do it already, but we leave our wisdom to the fullest already. So that means maybe the wisdom at that time may be negative 30, but maybe we live to negative 30 already. Then okay lor, then we have to accept and let go and just try to move on with life and try to use the future, you know, sometimes to make it up for it. Of course, if you've done the five heinous crimes, then there's, of course, according to the Buddhist teaching, you may be born in the Apaya in the next life, but continue to do good. It's not an excuse for us to stop doing good, you know. If we've done bad in the past, then we try to do good and do good again and again and again and again so that first we don't do the mistake again. Second, we try to, in our mind, try to make it up for it, by doing good, like that. And there's one thing about forgiveness is that we can also contemplate that because of karma and because of different associations, we are living in a different country, maybe in a specific country, we have our own conditionings there. So Because of these conditionings, because of how we receive our education, because of how we grew up in a good, in a harmonious family or in a not harmonious family, or all these reasons, the process of our growing up and our encounters in life, all these are also factors that affect how we make decisions, isn't that so? So when we contemplate like that, then we understand that, oh, I made this choice. That was because I didn't have a better choice at that time. I mean, who wants, if you have a better choice, I don't know, but if you have a better choice, who wants to like kill people? I don't know. Because of contemplating that we have gone through all this and that results in that, then we understand that, because of these different factors, our conditioning, our upbringing, our education, and our experiences in life, that's why these things happen. Okay, this is no good. I think there's one sutta that says, I have done this killing before. It is no good. But if I dwell upon it, I will not be able to transcend it. So let's move on. I think there's a sutta like this. So with this, we try to... when we contemplate like this, not only for ourselves, but also for others, then we can let go of our mind and with this understanding that, things happen because of conditions and unwise attention. So if we've done that, then, or if someone do that to you and you want to forgive that person, we can contemplate like this. If we were in that person's shoes, then maybe we have done the same thing also. So, forgive la, like that. Then we understand it's because of conditions, and okay, then we, because of this understanding, it helps to purify the mind, helps the mind to be balanced again, and because of this understanding, and then we can forgive and we can let go also, like this la. So, this is one of the ways, these are some of the ways that we can relate to forgiveness in this way la. Also, hopefully answer your question.
Thanks. The Mara, sorry, two things. First, you talk of Mara. Mara. Mara is often sort of expressed as a personality, sitting in front of you and telling, not do this, do the wrong things. I mean, even when there are pictures about Mara telling Buddha not to do this and that, right? But my understanding, this Mara is your inner demons in your head. The thoughts, bad thoughts coming into your head. There is no personality that is coming. That's not external problem, it's an internal problem. So all the defilements that is coming to surface, and because we all have those things, so tell the wrong things. We know that because we are all mad to a certain extent, so defilements are there. But when extremely mad in a psychotic state, you really see things and hear things. So that is a good example to know that this so-called Mara is in your head. Am I right?
Sorry, I didn't catch the last word. Do you think that the Mara is?
Do you understand
actually,
what I said?
For Mara, there are five.
Do you see Mara as an external thing?
Oh, no, need that. Mara, that's, according to the definition of Mara, if I never remember wrongly, there's five types of Mara. Defilements, also one type of Mara. Yeah.
The other thing about, we are talking about karma and workings of karma.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we got the impression that we had to burn off our karma. I mean, to be enlightened. I mean, people think like that. We have to. That's a sort of Hindu version of how to get it off, get to moksha, to burn off all your karmic activities in the past. But I think Buddha's teaching was, as I understand, it's a little different. Because karma works for processes and phenomena through our ignorance we interact with these processes and phenomena as ours, and we pay a price for it. And we really pay a price. But the Buddha's way of getting out of this is remove the connection, destroy the self, and not to play with these processes and phenomena. That is how you end your affection of karma. Am I right?
Yeah. In a sense, like after you practice and then you attain arahantship, then you do not create karma anymore. So that will be the ending of karma. No, after you enter into Mahaparinibbana, then that's the Parinibbana with no residue. So karma cannot take place. There's no rebirth anymore. Like that lah. So for in Buddhism as I know it, we don't talk much about burning off or like
living through the karma and exhaust it.
It's exhausting, but we don't like shrink it, you know. So it's in the Nonapana Sutta that you can read the Nonapana Sutta. So just due to the time constraint, I'll just say the gist of it. Okay, how we can use it. So according to the Lonapana Sutta, it is said that, I'll just give an example. If you have 1 kg of salt and you put it into a bucket of water and you mix it up, then, very salty. Huh? But if you put 1 kg of salt and put it in the Yara River and then you drink, it's not salty. So the bad karma that has been accumulated is like the salt. It's 1 kg. But how to overcome it? Or in the text it says that how does a person do one traveling karma but not suffer so much because of it? Huh? I think you guys can read the sutta. So it's because the water, the good karma. According to the text, the Buddha says here somebody is virtuous and is good and practice morality and all that. Huh? Then I think you can read the text for more exact description. And because of this, the karma, they are able to withstand the karma better, the akusala karma. So in a way, when we practice in daily life, when we understand that, oh, this karma is 1 kg, okay, but we can try to, you know, like dilute it with a lot of water. And what are the water? All the wholesome deeds of true body, speech, and mind. And with this, then the bad karma may ripen, but you may not feel so much of an effect. Or it may ripen, but you may have help coming to you. Like if you're sick, if you're sick, then maybe you have good doctors. If you have been doing good a long time, then a lot of wholesome deeds a long time, then you may meet up with good doctors and good physicians, good nurses, and who poke the needle gently into your vein and not like, you know. So yeah, this is how we practice like this. And as we continue to practice, we understand that we are practicing for the ending of karma. So but along the way, we have to accumulate a lot of wholesome karma in order for us to be able to practice efficiently like that towards that path and towards that realization. Okay, do I answer your question? Okay,
that's good. That's good. That's good. So your talk was very good.
Okay. Okay.
Venerable, would you like a quick question from online?
If I can answer quickly.
Well, this is a quick question. Okay. I don't know if it's a quick answer. It says, what can we do to generate good karma quickly?
Give up everything and practice meditation. Now, it's a lay person, right? In the next second, generate wholesome mind states. So there's one thing for the little people, which I always recommend. And when I first went to Sri Lanka, the first instruction that I got from my teacher, Venerable Aryananda, is that, that time I wasn't ordained. So he said, oh, brother, try to maintain your mind wholesome states the whole day. And I said, how to do that, Bante? So he says, okay, you can practice seven kinds of meditation subjects. For example, the four Brahma Viharas and contemplation about Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta and all that. Or you can do the four guardian meditation and contemplate about Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta. And continue to let your mind always abide in these subjects throughout the day. So how to practice is that 1 minute, so it's an estimate, like 2 minute metta. From the time I wake up until the time I sleep, when you're brushing your teeth or when you're going to the toilet or when you're sweeping or whatever. There's 1 minute metta, 1 minute karuna, 1 minute mudita, 1 minute upeka, 1 minute anicca, 1 minute dukkha, 1 minute anatta. And continue again. And this flow, continue this flow again and again, again and again. Then actually I recommend this practice a lot for lay people, because if we can implement this into our daily life, there's one very good habit that lay people can cultivate, which is when you are free, just go back to Dhamma. When you are free, oh, okay, finish cooking, okay, go back to Dhamma. Then when you do like that, then actually you, because a lot of lay people say, ah, Bande, temptation, there's a lot of temptation in the world, I cannot overcome my temptation, I must go for parties and all that. So a lot of people say this to me and they feel that their mind doesn't have that strength to proceed with wholesome deeds. But actually I do recommend them to try to practice, to keep their mind in wholesome mind states the whole day, but if not possible, then at least when they are free, when their mind is free, come back to the subject, whether it's sending blessings to your family members or the people around you or any Dhamma subject that you like. So always do that. Then you'll find that, as you practice this, this is a practice of actually the principle coming from Gochara Sampajanya. So when you practice this and practice this again and again, you'll find that gradually you will have enough strength to take one more step. That means gradually you'll be able to fulfill your determination of, okay, before sleeping, I'll try to meditate 5 minutes, okay. And if I sleep while I meditate, it's okay, like that. Then sometimes they cannot do, but if they do this again and again, the mindfulness builds up bit by bit. Then they'll find that as they do this, their mind will gain strength and they're able to do, to carry out some Dhamma activities that they told themselves that they should try to do it and cultivate it. Right? So this is one of the things for lay people, and especially to implement Dhamma in your daily life, in whatever activities that you do when you're driving and you stop, send metta to all the drivers, angry or not angry, and wish them well and happy when you're cooking for your family. So every night, but be careful lah, when you every night go down, this is for family, may they be well and happy, this is for family, may they be well and happy. So actually, because I got this from my stay in Sri Lanka, we have to do a lot of Buddha Puja. So in Sri Lanka, we have those small Indian jasmine flowers and we have a plate and we have to, you know, every day, 4:30 in the afternoon, so we have to put it and arrange the flowers. So there's one very good practice that that I did was like, when I took one flower, I said, "Oh, may this flower be offering to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha of past, present, future. May this flower be offering to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha of past, present, future." And then after you finish one plate, you feel so high, you know? Yeah. Then after that, when you offer it to the Buddha at 6:30, you feel so much joy from that. And this joy can be experienced even if you are not so good in meditation. Okay? So, taking that principle and applying it in our daily life. So when you're instead of like complaining, why do I have to cook for my family? Why always me? Then the chop gets harder and harder. Instead of that, And we just try to, you know, try to implement Dharma. We say, ah, this is my dana to my family. Wish them well and happy. Wish them healthy. And if you are doing it, preparing food for the Sangha or your loved ones or anyone, then try to do it with love and, you know, doing it with mindfulness. And then when you're cooking, when you're frying the vegetable, this is for the Sangha. This is for the Sangha. Oh, this is for the Sangha. Then you feel, I guarantee you, you definitely feel more happy than complaining, why me again? Why me again? This is confirmed, guaranteed, chopped. Okay? Yeah. So, implementing the Dharma in life and trying to maintain a wholesome state in whatever we do day to day, and you can be creative about it with the different Dharma subjects, then all this will help us to generate wholesome karma the fastest, and especially the next moment after you listen to this. Yeah, then if he or she in his house, they just generate loving kindness or karuna or metta or upekkha or mudita or upekkha, and the next moment, treat every moment as an opportunity to purify the mind and to create causes of happiness. And if we cherish every moment and let every moment be pure and be happy moment to moment, then we can generate karma the fastest. Okay. Hope this talk is beneficial to all of you.
Thank you, Venerable, for offering your teaching today.
Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay.